context of our human, the human institution of marriage, our relationship as husbands and wives here on the earth, there are also very clear roles defined for us in this word. Very clear. And so we need to understand that first and foremost. If we want to understand God's blueprint and God's design for marriage, and if we want to experience what God wants us to experience in our marriages on the earth, the fullness of it, we need to understand clearly what our God-given roles are as a husband and as a wife. And one of the biggest problems that I have seen in marriages, in my limited, it's not like I'm an old guy, but I've done it enough, I've seen enough of it, hundreds and hundreds at least, is roles. He doesn't understand who he's supposed to be. She doesn't understand who she's supposed to be. There's other things that get in there, but that's always in the top three. It's always one of the biggest struggles. So if we're going to go further and understand this thing, we have to understand our roles, our God-given roles. Now, this is where it starts to get a little dicey, a little tense in the room sometimes, because the roles are pretty right. Ladies, you're kind of already going, where's he going with this? He's going to pull up the S word in a second. Not that S word. I mean, not the S word, you know. Well, some might think that. But anyway, we talk about submission, obviously, is where I'm heading here. And our roles in marriage, our roles as a wife, our role as a husband. How's this thing work? And what does it mean for a husband to be the head of the home? What does it mean for a wife to submit to his loving leadership? All of those kinds of things. We need to head there. We need to talk about those things this morning, and we need to grapple with them. Try to figure this thing out. Now, before I go there, I want to give a few qualifiers, well, at least one or two, before we start really talking what about our roles and what they are. And the reason I want to give the qualifiers is because, and again, I'm only 33, so it's not like I've been around the church for years and years and years, but I have seen quite a bit in the evangelical / charismatic bent of the church. That's what my heritage has been. I've been around those things, where it's sometimes it seems like when you start talking about these things, women just feel devalued, or they've been led to believe that they are devalued, like they're less than when you start to talk about these things. And what we need to understand, if we're going to understand roles rightly, is that this is not about value, this is about function. Roles in marriage are not about value, they're about function. And she'll repeat after me. Roles in marriage, come on, I'm not kidding, are not about value, they're about function. Thank you. It's crucial to understand this. It really is. Because oftentimes we start talking about submission. The husband is the head of the house and the head of the wife and the church. I don't think she's meant to. I don't understand what the whole deal is, but it's as if women are kind of like they're just supposed to sit and be quiet and do nothing and say nothing. And they've been I think, in some ways oppressed and mistreated in the church. And I don't think it's the Lord. I don't think that's the heart of the Lord at all. In fact, I think the Lord is on a mission in this generation to release women from some of that bondage that they're in. And because we need you in the church. You know, two-thirds of the church in America, 66% of the church in America is women. If women are just supposed to sit and watch men, we're in big trouble, because a lot of guys ain't doing anything anyway. But there's only a third of them, and there's two-thirds of you. And I want you to know that God needs you, wants you. The same Holy Spirit that's in me is in you. And He wants you to preach and prophesy. He wants you to pray for the sick. He wants you to do ministry. He wants to use you in your world in power. And the last thing I ever want women to think that go to this church and call me pastor is that their job is kind of to do nothing because they're a woman. That is absolutely not God's heart. But sometimes the church, when they start to talk about this idea of submission, can kind of lead women to believe that. And I want to say that. And then you couple that with what I call the Jethro syndrome, and then you have all kinds of trouble. Now, you guys know what the Jethro syndrome is? Jethro, you know who Jethro is, right? This is Jethro right here. He says, "Woman, ain't you supposed to submit to me?" The only verses Jethro knows is Ephesians 5, 22 through 24. He doesn't know the rest of the Bible, but boy, oh boy, he knows it says about submission and every woman, I'm supposed to be your head and you're supposed to submit to me, you're supposed to do what I tell you. And Jethro uses his authority that he's been given by God to control and dominate and manipulate his wife and to kind of convince her that her one and only job is to serve him. Jethro's favorite song is Put Another Log on the Fire. Anyone know that song? Put another log on the fire. If you're, my mom knows, there's my mom right there. Wave at everyone, mom. There you go. Mom used to be a redneck, so I grew up listening. I like country music now, and it's her fault, man. So it just got in me. Every once in a while, no one's looking, I put on Q106. Sorry. Sorry, Lord. That's Jethro's song, though. And you put those two things together, you got men that don't get it, you got a church that doesn't explain it right, and sometimes you have a formula that causes women to feel devalued. And that's not the picture. We need to be very careful because that's not what God's trying to get at with this thing. That's not God's heart in this. God's idea of marriage is not that she is less and you are more. That's just a wrong idea. God's idea of marriage is clearly seen in Genesis 2:24, which Paul quotes in verse 31 of Ephesians 5, that the man should leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That's God's version of this. God's idea of marriage is one flesh. Bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, Adam said. They are one. When we get married, we are one. We are completely equal in the eyes of God. And we need to start there and understand that. My wife and I are actually, in fact, some scholars say things like this, that if you understand rightly what it means to be bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. How you doing? If you understand rightly what it means to be bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, everyone's going to be afraid to walk around up here, right? It actually doesn't mean that she walks behind you or even necessarily that she really walks beside you, but rather, if you understand it rightly, it's almost that she walks a little bit in front of you so that you're behind her to protect her and watch over her. And really, that's God's heart for this thing. And so when I look at my wife, I'm not thinking she's supposed to be two paces behind me. She's right here, a little bit in front of me, called me my friend, my lover, my companion, and my teammate in this thing called life. She compliments me in every way. Everything I'm not, she is. And she inspires me always. And you put us together and you got one that's pretty good. And I see it that way. She's not less than me. We're complete equals. And you've got to understand that. Husbands and wives, you need to understand that. And then once you do, and hopefully you do, and I'm just telling you the obvious, I just want to make sure we all understand this here at this church. Once you understand that you're complete equals, then from that place, you can begin to talk about your roles. Because you do have very different roles. But once you understand that you're equal and God gave you different roles because you're designed different ways, then it's safe. And then you can actually start to talk about what it means to be a submissive wife and what it means to be the head of your home as a husband. And so now that we all understand we're complete equals, let's start to talk. We're going to start with the wives first and the wife's role in the context of marriage. Okay? Now, there's going to be several times, I promise, ladies, as I'm going through your role, you're going to go, yeah, what about him? Yeah, but. And you're going, well, I wouldn't do that if he, I understand. He's going to get his at the end. Okay? So my brain works this way. It's easier for me to do her and then him or him and then her. But for today, I do her and then him. So by the end of this thing, everyone hopefully will get what they need to get. So just give me some time. We'll get to him. I promise. Okay, I'll just set you up a little bit for that. So let's talk about the wife's role. Okay, I'm going to frame it up this way, and then I'm going to use this text in Ephesians 5, because this is the blueprint. The wife's role mainly is to be a helpmate, right? That's just Bible 101. She's calling me. Some ladies right now are going, what? A helper. It's Genesis 2. For Adam, no suitable helper was found. That's what the Lord said, right? And God tried all the different animals. And praise God, none of them worked. How'd you like to be married to a monkey? Some of you whining about your wife, be married to a baboon. So God tried all the animals. None of them worked quite right. So he puts Adam to sleep from his side. He brings forth Eve. Adam wakes up. I can't help but just imagine that. He had no idea what's coming, you know? He goes to sleep looking at monkeys and he wakes up and Eve is next to him. Woo! Way to go, God! He goes back to sleep to see if it can happen again. Naughty, she said over there. So my wife said, she was sitting there in the first service when I gave that joke, and she just went. She's not here now. Just kidding. And Eve became Adam's perfect match. His perfect match. And Adam got it, man. Adam got it. Bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She is me, Adam said. He got it. Eve was Adam. They were one flesh. And you see God's picture in the Garden of Eden, okay? Eve was Adam's perfect match. His helper, his helpmate. And that's what she was created and designed by God to be. This is his design. That a wife is meant to be her husband's helper or helpmate. Now, some of you right now are going, Shane, that doesn't sound very dignifying. That's just not that awesome. It really is that awesome. And here's why. We don't do a real good job with the Hebrew word helpmate, helper. What it originally meant in the Hebrew language is not what we think of. The word helper or helpmate could literally be translated lifesaver. Or even savior with a small s, some scholars say. So she was meant by God to be Adam's lifesaver. God looked at Adam and said, it is not good for Adam to be alone. That guy, yeah, garden's going to be a mess. He can't balance a checkbook. He's never going to be able to take care of the kids. He needs help. He's help. And Eve became for Adam a lifesaver. Now, when I look at my wife, I don't think my little helper. She's my little helper. I don't think that. I really don't. I think she is my lifesaver. And I would not be up here today if it weren't for her. I really wouldn't. This church would not exist. I don't know what you guys think about me. This church would not exist if it were not for my wife. You may never see her. She may never want a microphone. She may never want to be in a spotlight. But she is one of the primary reasons that I stand before you today and preach the gospel. She has been for me in a very real way. My lifesaver. Yeah. She deserves applause. And that's how I see this thing. And that's God's design. So when you think of what it means to be a helper, don't think it's just a little thing that you do. You are designed by God to be his lifesaver. And I think this, I guess, I think the one who reaches down to save the other person is in some ways greater and stronger. And so I think women in some ways are much stronger than men. I mean, for crying out loud, they have babies. How would you guys like to have a baby? I wouldn't want to have a baby. I almost got sick every time watching her have a baby. She did it 4 times, and every time she was comforting me while she was in labor. That's just terrible. I can even hardly watch it. Women are plenty strong. It's not, you're not weak. It's not like that. Okay, so what are you supposed to do? Okay, so you're his lifesaver. Well, how can you best save this guy's life? I'm going to give you 3 things. Just three. And I got 5 for him. 3. Well, really, kind of, well, whatever. Anyway, we'll figure it out. 3 things, though. Number one, you need, if you want to be his lifesaver, you've got to help him learn to lead your home. You've got to encourage him to take the lead, give him the reins of the house, and just help him learn to do this thing. And then you need to learn to lovingly submit and follow him and defer to him. You need to let him lead. Now, this is not easy in the world that we live in. The cards are stacked against us, right? Some of it's because many of us had dads that checked out. I mean, I watched my mom run the show. She had to. She worked third shift. She had to do. I mean, I just watched it. So some of us grew up that way, and we didn't really see it modeled right. So that's against us. Some of us had controlling and domineering moms, maybe, and so that can get passed down to girls and guys. Guys grow up. Sometimes men grow up. They had like a controlling mom, or just if they had a mom that had to run the show. Either way, they can kind of marry a woman that will. Continue to mother them. You know what I mean? And they sometimes it works against us that way. They look for a woman who's strong who will actually keep being their mother because they got mama'd and they want to keep being mama'd. And to quote one of my favorite preachers, an African-American preacher named Wellington Boone, he one time said this in a meeting I was at. He said, "Man, I want you to hear me clearly. Your wife ain't your mama." I said, "Well put, Wellington." That's just, I was a young man in the Lord, and that just stuck with me. I think he made us say it after him, too. "Say it after me. Your wife ain't your mama. My wife ain't my mama." That was so funny, man. And so much because of our background, we grow up that way, so we get whatever. That goes against us. And then just the culture we live in, even. Oh, man. It's anti-men, isn't it? I mean, you watch the sitcoms. They make men look so stupid. And the wife just pats him on the head, and then she really runs the show because she's responsible and cool, and he's this little doofy guy, and we just, oh, it's okay. And I just, it makes me sick. It's the enemy's attack on marriage. The enemy has so sought in our generation to devalue men and make men look stupid, and want us all to be like Homer Simpson or something. I don't know. It's just the whole idea. It's everywhere. Sitcoms. It's everywhere. There's an attack against men being men. Men are being emasculated. Men are being asked to be like women. I mean, man, oh man. And then women wonder why their men aren't more manly. And I'm like, well, because everyone's asking them to be a woman. And half the time, women are asking them to be womanly. And then they're offended later because their man isn't a man. I'm like, that's just, it's the culture we live in. And men just need to rise up and be men. It's okay to be a man. God wants you to be a man. But you as ladies, wives, need to help that guy be a man. You need to help him rise up and take control and to lead his home. And if it's not happening, you need to figure out how to make it happen. And here's why. Here's why this is so important. You don't have to like it. It's not like that. We just need to do it. Because he's accountable. I'm not trying to pick a fight. It's just, he's accountable. My heart burns for this. Because if you're a wife and you're leading your home and he thinks he's doing some loving thing by abdicating his authority to you, he's like mod and hip or whatever, the deal is this. He's still accountable. He is, even if he's not doing his job, before God, he cannot abdicate his authority. Does that make sense? He is still the one that God's looking at. At the end of the day, he's the one that God is holding accountable for the state, the overall state of the home, practically and spiritually. And he can try to not lead all he wants. The reality is he's still accountable before God. And so if you want to really help this guy, he's going to stand before him who has eyes of fire one day and give an account of his leadership of his home. And if you want to help him hear the right words, which are well done, good and faithful servant, you'll help him now by giving him the reins and encouraging him to take his place as the head of the home. And encourage that guy to lead and help him to do it. He needs your help and he needs your encouragement. The culture isn't helping him. So he needs his wife to help him be a leader in his home. And again, it's not always an easy thing. And I know sometimes women get upset about this. And I don't even want to talk about that. It just is what it is. Okay, because I've had so many, I talk about these things sometimes, and I get the emails from the ladies, and they're upset about it, they don't like it, and I just want to say, can I just say this, we can be done with it? I didn't write it. I'm not kidding. This is not my design. This is Bible 101. This is God's stuff. If you have a beef with this, do me a favor this week. Email God. Tell him. I didn't make it up. I'm just saying what it says. Let me say this, though, as long as we're on it. If this really bothers you, if you're a wife or a woman, and just a woman, and this bothers you, and even now your heart's going, I don't like this stuff, I don't like the submission thing, and that thing's rising up inside of you, I would encourage you to figure out why. Because it matters. Sometimes it's a generational sin that needs to be broken in a family where it needs to be broken, where mom was controlling, grandma was controlling, and now you're controlling. And that's just real. I'm not trying to pick a fight with you. It's real. But sometimes it's because a woman was hurt. Somewhere along the line, she was hurt by a man. Maybe her dad, maybe whatever, her husband, whatever. And there's real pain inside. And she is now afraid to be vulnerable and trust a man again. And she's not going to drop her guard and submit to any man. And she just will not go there. And if you have one of those issues, you really need to get to the bottom of why it affects you the way it does. And if you need healing, get healing. If you need deliverance, get deliverance. Get whatever you need. But it really is important that you help this guy lead. You've got to learn to give him the reins. And that's really all it means to submit to the guy. You know, that's kind of overdone. Everybody wants like a million practical examples. I'll give a few of what it means to submit to him. It just means to let him lead. I don't know how else to say it. It's just, you just let him lead. It just is what it is. I think we all know what it looks like to yield the right of way to someone else, right? You yield the right of way. You gently give the reins to him and you say, honey, this is on you. And I understand this is on you. And I want to help you do this thing, but you need to do this. You need to lovingly encourage him to rise up and take the reins of his home and lead, because he's going to be the one accountable whether he's doing it or not. Now, Sometimes this is not popular with women because of the way they understand submission, and some of that's because of the way the church has presented it. I want you to get a different version of submission, though, because sometimes women think weakness. Have you ever thought that? When you hear submission, you think, well, I'm just supposed to be weak. It's not, that's really a, if you ask my wife what she thinks about submission, I don't know for sure. I was teasing her a little bit in the first verse, but she wouldn't say anything. But I bet she would say something along the lines of, and she agreed, she said, yeah, I would say something like that, but she wouldn't actually say anything. Something along the lines of dignity, beauty, strength. She would say things like that. Meekness. She would say meekness. Weakness would never be in her vocabulary because she has a revelation of what submission is. It's Christ-like. It's voluntary. She voluntarily lays down her rights to submit and follow someone else. That is a powerful thing. This is not about weakness. It's about meekness. Meekness is having power and choosing not to use it. It's what Jesus did on the cross. That's the picture of meekness. He had all power. He could have called legions of angels to come and wipe out everyone who was spitting on him and mocking him and laughing at him, but he would not do it because he restrained his power for the betterment of you and I under the authority and in submission to his Father. And the idea of biblical submission, rightly understood, is identifying with Christ, and it's anything but weak. It's extremely strong and it's extremely beautiful. And we don't have it up here, so I don't have time to read it to you, but 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. If you're a woman, this is an amazing text. It talks about the holy women of the past and how they made themselves beautiful to God. And it says they did it by a gentle and quiet spirit that was submissive to their husbands. And God says this. God said that they were beautiful to him. God doesn't see the outward. He doesn't see the outward ornaments and adornment. He looks past all of that right to the heart. And when he finds a woman who is walking in submission to her husband, just because she identifies with him, he says it's beautiful. That's what God, you know what? I don't care what the world says. And if I were you as a wife, I honestly would not care what the world says. So the world says what it says. So what? The Genesis 1 God who spoke all things and created out of nothing looks upon a woman who's trying to walk in godly submission to her husband. He gets a smile on his face and he says, oh, that is so beautiful to me. I mean, if I was a woman, I would chuck the world's opinion and grab hold of God because he calls it beautiful. Okay? And just one other thing about what it looks like, or if you understand it right, it's very freeing as well. People that want authority, whether it's a wife in her home that doesn't like this, she doesn't want to let her husband lead, or whether it's whatever, anyone that wants authority, I just think, I say it often to them, I think you don't understand authority very well. If you understand, I don't want authority. I'd be happy to abdicate my authority. I've tried. I've tried to get out of it lots of times, whether it's in the church or in my home, because it's a frightening thing. If you really understand authority, you get it. I understand the deal here at this church. I'm the one that stands before him and gives an account of this thing. Nobody else does at the level I do. That's horrifying to me. People that are striving for authority, what are you thinking? We are judged way more severely. Husbands are judged so much more severely than their wives. And if you want to help him stand before him, I say it again, if you want to help him stand before him clean in that day and hear, well done, good and faithful servant, you're going to help your husband be the best leader he can, because the deal is he is the one accountable. And it's not about a personality thing. Just another big thing we get into. Well, you know, it's easy for you and Vicky because, well, she's really quiet and you're so loud and obnoxious. It just works out well. It's true. I am loud and obnoxious. It's true that she is quiet. It has nothing to do with submission. It has nothing to do with being the head of a home. That's an absolutely demonic and bizarre and twisted fable that comes from the heart of humanism and political correctness. It's wrong. I've heard that so many times. Show me one verse in the Bible where it talks about personality. God doesn't even talk about that. He doesn't even talk about personality. He talks about roles. He talks about men and women. He's designed us different and he's made us different. And I know a lot of women who are, my wife is quiet. I know a lot of quiet women, even quieter than my wife, who are completely unsubmissive to their husbands. You can be quiet and strong-willed. I mean, it's not about a personality. I know a lot of men who are type A times 10 and totally obnoxious who don't have the first clue about what it means to leave their home. This is not about a personality. You know what it's really about? It's about willful choices. It's not about a personality. Joyce Myers. Joyce Myers is a little type A, don't you think? You guys know who Joyce Myers is? She's a leader. She's a preacher. You ever heard her talk about submission to her husband? It's beautiful to hear her talk. She totally gets it. You can be a woman and be the president of the United States and have complete authority and leadership in this country and be radically submissive to your husband at home. It has nothing to do with person. It's about God's design. It's about the way He's made the home to function. It's about His blueprint for marriage, and He has set this thing up to operate this way. And when we get outside of those bounds because we think, well, I'm more leader. I'm a better leader by nature than my husband, so I'm going to take the reins. We're out of bounds. You're out of bounds. You're in a safe place, and He's still going to be accountable. We need to operate in the confines of God's blueprint if we want to experience the fullness of what God wants us to have in the context of our marriage. Does that make sense? Okay, what does it really look like, though? Well, hopefully it looks something like this, some version of this, that when it comes to the overall leadership and direction of your church, because I tease our staff all the time, the pastoral staff, I call them my wife. Because that's how I try to lead the church. I am so into this model of leadership. If I did a business, I would do leadership this way. This is just so right to understand leadership through this lens. So I joke with them all the time. Like, you guys are like my wife. And if you want to be a good leader, I think it's a good lens to look through. Anyway, hopefully it looks like some version of this. In your marriage, you and your husband make all the decisions together. And hopefully you're in complete agreement about the decisions. And if he's a good leader, he's not running ahead, making decisions without you just because he has the authority. That's terrible leadership. So hopefully he's a good leader. Whether he is or isn't, though, we'll talk about that later. But hopefully it looks like that. But here's the deal. Every now and then, and it's very rare in my home, and I couldn't even think in the first service, I was looking at Vicky, and I couldn't even think of a time in the last year or two that this happened. But every now and then, there may be something that comes into your path as a husband or wife that you disagree on. Has that ever happened? Has that ever happened in anybody's marriage where you actually have to make a decision and you've disagreed? And it happens every now and then. But if you have a husband who's a good leader, hopefully it's rare. But every now and then, this is going to happen. Now, usually you don't have to make the decision, and there's a reason that your wife doesn't feel good about it, and I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, I'm talking to the ladies. The husbands are next. Ladies, every now and then, you may have a situation that comes up and you disagree. In those times, you are called by God to defer to your husband, to defer to him. Now, I'm not saying you're supposed to be a wallflower. I'm not saying you're supposed to go, yes, dear, whatever you say, dear. I'm not saying you're supposed to be some kind of doormat. You're supposed to help this guy lead. And the best way you can help him lead is to let him know exactly what you think about every situation in your home. Because he needs you to be you for him to be the leader that he's called by God to be. And I ask my wife intensely, okay, what would you do if you had to make this decision? She goes, well, I don't. I'm glad. I say, okay, I get it. But if there was a gun to your head right now and someone said, you have to make the decision, what would you do? And I want to hear from her at that level. Tell me what you think. I need to know exactly what you think and what you would do so I can make the best decision here. And sometimes, every once in a while, we disagree. And when we disagree, she has to lovingly defer to me. And you're called to do the same thing with your husband. And women go, they say things, they don't like that. And they go, well, what if he's wrong? Maybe he's wrong. What if you're wrong? Maybe he's wrong. Well, what if it negatively affects my family and our finances? It could. It really could. His wrong choice could negatively impact your family and your finances. It really could. That's the power of leadership. That's just how the thing works. There's nothing I can say to make that better. That's just, it happens in this church every now and then. It's very rare, but every now and then with our staff, we try to do everything in unity, but if we have to make a decision, we can't agree on it. It's on you, Shane. And sometimes I make the wrong choice. Sometimes I just do it wrong. And I'm so grateful for this church. You guys have, over the 8 years we've been doing this, you guys have let me grow up, and I make way fewer mistakes now in those things than I used to. But man, I've made messes before, and I'm so grateful for a family of believers and a group of people around me on my team that hasn't said things like this to me. Well, I told you, man, you should have listened to us. I told you so. That would have tore me apart. I've been blessed with my wife and the people around me. They've helped me grow up in leadership by encouraging me when I have made the wrong choice. Here's what I'm trying to say. Give him room to fail. He might screw up every once in a while. So what? Is it that big a deal? Give the guy some room. And when he does blow it, don't say, told you so. Encourage him. Put your arm around him. around and help. He might be insecure. You don't know what his family was like, his background was like, maybe. Maybe he's insecure about this leadership thing already. When he makes a mistake and he knows it, he is so vulnerable. Be gentle with his little ego and encourage him and help him to get back up and keep leading. And you know what? Here's what you got to hear, ladies. I don't care what it looks like right now or what your husband acts like right now. There's a leader inside of him because he's made by God to be one in your home. There's a leader in him. There's a great leader in him. And you have the power to release that leader by what you speak to that man. He's created in the image of a warrior bridegroom. He's created in the image of a leader. That means there is a leader inside of him. See past his weakness right into the heart of who he is and call forth the leader that's in him because it's in there. And you have radical power to help that leader come forth. And so I'm saying this. Try not to discourage him when he blows it. And he will blow it sometimes. So just try to encourage him when he does. And whatever you do, please, don't nag him. Don't nag him. I don't have a definition for nag. I just know what it is, and it freaks me out. I'm not kidding. It just doesn't help anything. You're not going to help your husband by nagging at him about if he's not doing something right or if you see a weak spot in his life. You're just not, nagging will not get him there. I'm telling you the truth, and God doesn't like it. God thinks it's annoying. No, for real. Sometimes I just say stuff, it sounds mean. I don't mean it to be mean. He does. Two of my favorite Proverbs, I think they're so funny. Proverbs, I don't have the references in my head, but the book of Proverbs, one of them says this. This is what God says. He says, it's better to live on the corner of your housetop than with a nagging wife. God gets it. He says, there's another one that's even better. I use this one on my little girl already. He says, a nagging wife is like a dripping faucet, like the constant drip of a dripping faucet. Drip, drip, drip. My little girl, she starts doing the naggy thing right now. I go, drip, drip. Stop it, that's annoying. Yes, it is. Drip, drip. Your husband's going to thank me someday. Drip. Drip. We just go, it's so funny. And he doesn't. It's just gonna push him the other way. I'm trying to help you, actually, not him. If you want to help the guy, don't nag at him. Pray for him. You have power. When a submissive wife who's trying to do this thing the right way hits her knees, you don't need to nag the guy. Just go nag God. You'll get. You know how I know this? I read it in my wife's journal. My wife has so much. I get nervous when she prays because he's going to listen to her. I had a little dog. My mom remember this. His name was Coco. I had this little miniature schnauzer. His name was Coco. And he was so mean, but he was totally my dog. And I could just at any moment, and I did this to my mom more than once. I got in trouble before, but it was worth it. I said, might as well confess right now, Mom. It was worth it. I would say, I could do this to anyone. I just say, watch him, Coco. Watch him. He's going, arr, arr. I was a little guy, so it was totally cool to have some power. And all I had to do is just say, sick him, and he'd bite anybody at any time. My dad, oh, what he's doing, bite that dog would never bite me if they bite the hand that feeds them. And so we had to prove it one time, and he just laughs right on. I told you, Dad. You asked for it. And sometimes I think my wife has that kind of power with God, where she just says, watch him, God. I feel it in my quiet times. And every now and then I think she says, sick him. Okay, I'll call her right now. Honey, I'm so sorry. I was a jerk this morning. Please forgive me. I'm not kidding. You have power. Trust me. If your husband has a heart for God, even a little bit, and you're praying for him, God will get his attention. You don't need to nag him. Okay? What else? Respect him. Verse 33 says it two times in there, actually. Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Verse 33, it says it, though. To respect your husband. It goes with submission, right? In a great way. It goes with submission. Respect is submitting, for sure. But I'm thinking of a little different slant on it. Think of admiration. Your husband needs to know that you admire him and that you believe in him. You can make him great. I said it before. I'll say it again. My wife, she is the reason I'm standing here today. She believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. She believed in this when I didn't believe in it. You have have power. I want to say this to you ladies. I want you to hear this. This is all you hear today. This is fine. You have more power to make your husband great than you'll ever know. I mean, it's like when a man feels like his wife believes in him and she speaks those things. I mean, she does it. She actually says what she loves and respects and admires about that guy. It's just like, Popeye just ate his spinach, man. I mean, I feel invincible. I was just on a little trip somewhere, and she surprised me. My wife, she had a little card in my bag with a couple little suckers. It was really sweet. And there's a little card there. I opened up the card, and just saying those, I left my room. I could take the world! I mean, man, when he believes that you have so much power, and I'm telling you the truth, behind every great man, there is a woman. And behind every great man, there's a surprised mother-in-law. I just can't lay off that one. I laid off in the first service, but I couldn't lay off it this time. True in my case. Wow, was she surprised. The day we got married, my mother-in-law, Vicky's mom, she was crying. And she sang to all of Vicky's bridesmaids, I prayed her whole life that she'd marry a Christian. I said, never thought it'd be him. But she meant it in a good way, because she just really, I was not a good guy, man. She did not want me near her daughter, so now I'm a Christian. They got married. It was, anyway, let's just say she was surprised. It was true in my case. I'll just say that. So your husband, moral of the story is, he needs you to believe in him. He needs to know that you believe in him, that you respect him. Speak the words. You have so much power to make him great. And you can tell when a man has a wife like that. You can just tell. And if your husband doesn't feel successful in his own home, he's going to get eaten alive out there in the world. It is hard out here. It really is. It's hard to be a man in this world. And if he's feeling emasculated and beat down and discouraged at home, he'll get eaten alive out there. And you can tell when guys are under this thing. I've talked to so many men. They say, Shane, forget it, man. It doesn't even matter. Whatever I do just ain't good enough for her anyway. I'm just done trying. I try this and that's not right. And I try that and I'm trying my best. And it's just nothing's ever good enough, so forget it. See, you need to understand the same power you have to build him up, ladies, is the same power that you have to destroy him. And you need to be very careful with that man's very, very fragile ego, and use the power that God has given you as his lifesaver to build him up and make him strong. Okay? Is that good? So other stuff I can say about that. I gotta move on though. The third one, cheapers. I gotta hurry up. Is sex. And I'm just adding this one because it's so important. If you really want to be his lifesaver, and it's weird, I know, because there's single people here and stuff, and so just whatever. But what are you gonna do? This is the number one issue for men. I've talked to so many men, and they just feel oftentimes like their wife is disinterested in their sexual needs. And wives oftentimes are, well, he doesn't this. We'll get there in a second. But men just need to know that you care. And sometimes just hearing it from another man that isn't your husband, sometimes maybe that helps. But I'm going to read from a woman's perspective, though. Stormy O'Mardian says it great. I'm going to just read some of the stuff she said. I just want you to know, because sometimes women go, well, man, the guy's just, he's just like an animal. And you know what? He is. No, it's a physical need, for real. Because women need to be like emotionally connected and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then sex and intimacy, it's really wonderful. If they don't feel emotionally connected, then they just don't want to go there. A man could not see you for 4 days and just want to attack you if you're his wife. He doesn't need to feel emotionally connected. He has physical needs. It's a physical need. There's a literal, it's just science, a little physiology 101. After 72 hours or so, right in there, he's pretty much maxed out. And he needs some help from his wife. I don't know how else to say that when he's, I'll just leave it there. It's a physical need. It's a physical need. Okay. And he just needs to know that you care, is what I'm trying to say. Most men, I shouldn't say most, I'll be careful. Many men feel like their wives are disinterested, like they have to beg for sex, and it just beats them down, and it really affects them in a way that is incredibly deep. So I'm going to read from Stormy, and then we'll get the guys, okay? She says this, after 20 years of praying with women about their failing, struggling, unfulfilling, or dead marriages, I've observed frequently that sexual relationship is a low priority in their minds. It isn't that the wife cares nothing about that part of her life, it's that there are so many other things screaming for her attention, such as raising children, work, finances, managing a home, emotional stress, exhaustion, sickness, and marital strife. In the wife's juggling of priorities, sex can end up on the bottom of her list. Some women allow week after week, month after month, 6 months, or even a year go by without having sexual relationships with their husband for one reason or another. I'm getting pained just reading that. When that's crazy. If you haven't had sex for a year and you're married and you're here with your husband or your wife, I want you to go home and have sex. That's crazy. You know what? Hey, listen, wait. I don't even care if you guys like each other or not. Just you.
You probably like each other better afterwards than you do right now anyway. What do you got to lose?
Okay, okay, okay. So, listen to what she says. Listen to what she says. Don't get silly. When disaster hits, they're surprised. Hello. Even though the wife may have felt fine about this arrangement, her husband was being neglected in an important part of his being. That's what an understatement. Okay, for a wife, the guys are going, yeah! Okay, for a wife, sex comes out of affection. She doesn't want to be affectionate with a man who makes her feel angry, hurt, lonely, disappointed, overworked, unsupported, uncared for, or abandoned. Isn't that right, ladies? Did you hear that, boys? Did you hear that? You guys got to get this book. But for a husband, sex is pure need. His eyes, ears, brain, and emotions get clouded if he doesn't have that release. He has trouble hearing anything his wife says or seeing what she needs when that area of his being is neglected. I like the way she says it, that area of his being. That's one way to put it, Stormy. Wives sometimes have it backwards. They think we can have sex after we get the other issues settled. But actually, there is a far greater chance of settling the other issues if sex comes first. Yes and amen. That's why it is important. I'm just being straight with you ladies. This is just good stuff right here. That's why it's important to make sex a matter of priority in your marriage. Whether all the conditions are perfect, whether you feel like it or not, isn't the point. The point is meeting the needs of your husband and keeping communication lines open. A man can easily be made to feel insignificant, beaten down, discouraged, destroyed, or tempted in this area of his being. There is probably no more important means of fulfillment for a man and no area where he is more vulnerable. So true in the world we live in today. Sexual problems are quite common because many women do not have a grasp on what God says, but the Bible is crystal clear. 1 Corinthians 7:4-5. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another except for consent and for a time that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Sex between a husband and wife is God's idea. Unless we're fasting or praying for weeks at a time or experiencing physical infirmity or separation, there is no excuse not to engage in it regularly. When we're married, our bodies are not our own. We owe each other physical attention, and we're not to deprive one another. The frequency of sex depends on the other person's need, not yours alone. If your attitude about having sex comes down to only what you need or what you don't want, then you don't have God's perspective. He says our body is to be used to comfort and complete the other person. Something is built up in the man and in the marriage when this need is met by his wife. Something is diminished when it is not. Okay, she goes on and on. It's just good stuff. And I just want to reiterate it. Some women, there's lots of things. Well, do I have to, every time he, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. I just trying to make you aware that he's got real needs and it really matters to him. If you want to be a lifesaver to him in this world, you'll be willing to help him with that area of his being. Okay? Okay? What if my husband is an unbeliever or if he's not doing his end of the deal? And I'm afraid to be this kind of wife because I'm afraid I'll get taken for a ride. Well, first of all, if your husband's an unbeliever and you start really doing these three things, he might become a believer. That's what they're teaching at that church. I believe! I believe! He might be here with you in 3 months. I would make a believer out of me. Really? That's what that guy's saying? I'm in. Go give him this tape. Maybe he'll come next time. But here's the deal. Whether your husband's an unbeliever or he's just doofy and a believer and he doesn't do his part, I have a feeling most guys after a few months would respond to this. Okay? And even if they don't, you're still supposed to do it because it's what's right before God. And you'll get rewards in heaven. Maybe your emotional tank won't ever get filled up the way you need it to be here. And you're doing everything you're supposed to do. You know what? You'll stand before your bridegroom one day, Jesus, and he's going to say, well done, my good and faithful servant. And everything you ever longed for is going to be there. So even if you don't get it here, by doing your part, you'll get it there because you kept doing it out of submission to Christ first and foremost. Okay? Sound good, guys? You like that, man? Okay, let's talk about you. Let's talk about this. How can we make this easy for our wives? The guy's part is much harder, but I don't need as much time with it. We'll see what happens here. It says, because here's the deal. If we're doing our part, it should be easy for our wives. Verse 25, Ephesians 5:25. Love your wife even as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So all we have to do, because sometimes when we go, well, submission is so hard. I say, well, maybe, but look at what he's got to do. He's got to love his wife as Christ loved the church. He's got to lay down his life for his wife. And if we're doing our part, it makes it very easy. Here's what I'm trying to say. If we're doing our part right, our wives should enjoy this. It should be easy for them to submit to our authority. to be the kind of husband that Christ was, to lay down his life for his bride. So I'm going to give you just a few ways to do this. Number one, use your authority to serve and not lord. Authority is always only given to serve. And the purpose of authority in your house is for you to be a servant of your wife. To use all the authority that you've been given to serve her, to everything that you do, you say, okay, God's given me authority. The purpose of this authority is to serve my wife, to honor my wife, and to do what's best for my wife and kids. Practical example, you need your taxes back and you want to get a new gun, but you know she needs a dishwasher. What do? You get the gun, of course. I'm just kidding. It's things like this. It's things like this where every decision you make with her best interest in mind. Seriously, this is really what we're supposed to do, you guys. And if we're this kind of husband, loving our wives as Christ loved the church and using our authority to serve her in every arena, she will embrace this thing. It will make it easier. If your wife doesn't actually enjoy submitting to your authority, there may be reasons for it and you might want to figure it out. Am I loving her as Christ loved the church? Am I laying down my life? Am I using my authority to serve her in every way, or am I being a Jethro? And if you're being Jethro, stop it. I'm not kidding. It's not a joke. 1 Peter 3 verse 7 says God will not even answer your prayers if you're misusing your authority. If you're using your authority to abuse her or neglect her or just control her and dominate her, if you're really doing those kinds of things, not only are you in trouble in that day when you stand before him, but right now on the earth, he says he will not even answer your prayers. So you need to be very, very careful that you're using your authority to serve. Authority is always only given to serve. I say it to our leaders in the church all the time. Why do we have authority? Why are we leaders? Well, so we can lord it over them. No, so we can get down underneath the people that we're called to serve and lift them up and make them great. Husbands, that is what you are called to do in your home. To serve your wife and to serve your children and to lay down your life so that they can be greater. You become less and they become greater. And that's what true authority is in the context of your home. Okay, so don't be a control freak. Number two, I would say this when it comes to not misusing your authority. Don't be a control freak. A good leader identifies the gifts and callings to the people around him and releases them to do it. It's one of my greatest gifts in leadership. I'm a terrible leader in many ways. I'm not the greatest pastor, all that kind of stuff, but I have some gifts in leadership, and that's one of my greatest ones. I'm secure enough in God to get people that are more gifted than me around me that can do all the stuff I could never do, and then just tell them to go and give them everything they need to do it. That's what a good leader actually does. And if you're a good leader in your home, some husbands are control freaks. And I talked to a woman after the first service. She doesn't even know what's in her checkbook. Everything's in his name. I mean, it was horrific. Like, he's got his stuff and she just, whatever, it was terrible. And some husbands are like that. Their wife doesn't know what's going on in any arena. They're the man. You just, you know, take care of dinner, woman. And you need to not do that. If she's more gifted than you in an area, release her to lead in that area. My wife, I joke about it, but it's true. They mail my checks right to my wife from the office because I'm just so bad with money. They used to put my checks in my box. I'd leave it there for a week. They'd take your money home. Oh, yeah. And I'm just not good at that. So they just mail to my wife. She's a double major in math and econ from the UW. She does all the budget, the whole thing. I don't even see money. I know where it is if I need to get some. That's all it is. I sit down with her at the beginning of the year. We do the budget together. I say, I think this. Okay, go for it. Do it. And she does all of it. I don't even think about it. She's better. I would be a terrible leader. I was, well, woman, I'm supposed to be the head of the home and checkbook's mine. I never have that checkbook. Man, I have to ask her, honey, where's the checkbook? Sometimes I'll ask her, do we have any money? How much money do we have? Every now and then I'll just kind of wonder. What? She's, yeah, it's okay. Okay, good. Thanks. And so she's better at it. So let her do what she's called by God to do. Let her do what she's gifted to do. A third thing I want to say, and you got to get this one, is you do have power to make decisions because you're the head of the home. And I talked about it a little while ago. Every now and then, there may be decisions that you have to make that you guys aren't in agreement on. Man, oh man, oh man, if you go a way that she's not in agreement with, this very rarely ever needs to happen. I don't even remember the last time it happened in my home. It's happened, though, a few times here and there, where I had to make a decision and she thought something different about that decision. Now, if I go a way that she doesn't agree with, now, most guys just go right to that decision. You know, they just go, well, that's what I think we're supposed to do, so we're just going to go do it. And 95% of those decisions that they make, they don't even have to make. They really don't. If your wife isn't in agreement with you, there may be a reason. Seriously. God's in her. Listen to that. Very, very seldom will I make a decision that affects my home if my wife is not in agreement with me. And if I do, here's what I need to know. That for sure I did it with a pure heart. You know what I mean? That I did it because I can stand before God and say, Lord, I know we disagree here a little bit, but I really think this is what's best for her and the kids. And if I can say that with integrity, I'm clean. But man, if I'm making that decision and she's not in agreement with it, and I'm making it because I have the authority to do it, but I'm doing it because it's best for me and not them, I am in trouble, and so are you, man. That is a misuse of your authority. You cannot do that. I mean, you can, but you're going to be in trouble in that day. So make sure you're doing this thing in agreement with your wife. Okay? That's what I want to say about that part. I want to do number two. Number two, do not abdicate. So number one was use your authority rightly. Number two, do not abdicate your authority. I already talked about it a little bit in the practical affairs. Some men don't want to lead. Some men will go halfway though. They'll hear me say that stuff. They'll go, okay, you know, I'll do that thing. I'm going to really get involved with the stuff around the house, and even going to try to get to know the kids' names, you know, whatever those guys are. And what do they do again? I'm going to try to, you know, okay. And they'll go halfway, but they won't go the whole way, which is to take authority of the spiritual climate of the home as well. And you have to do this too, because some guys will just go, well, you know, I'm taking the leadership thing, trying to do that seriously, but, you know, I'm not really into the Bible and the prayer thing, and my wife, she's kind of more religious than I am, more spiritual. That's illegal. You're still accountable. Man, I've just had enough of it. I'm not trying to sound harsh here. I am so tired of it. I've been in the ministry for all these years, and 3-1, it's the woman who's burning and wanting her husband to come along. It's just time for that to change. Let it be here. Let it be this place. Let it be different here. Our wives need us to set the pace spiritually. They're longing for this. Our kids need to see it. Our kids need to see Dad up early with his Bible. Our kids need to see Dad on his knees. Our kids need to see Dad praying and fasting because he needs to make decisions for his family. It's us. It's time for men to rise up and burn for Jesus with passionate hearts in this generation. And if you're single and you want to be attractive to a young lady, burn for Jesus, because the young women I know in the church are longing to see some young men that are mature in Christ and sold out to him. You get hot for God, you might not last single too long. And if you're a married man and you want to be attractive to your wife, most wives I know are longing for a man that will take the spiritual leadership of his home, and they become very attractive to that woman. So go for it. Just go for it. Okay? Number three, verse 28. I don't have time to do it, so I'm just going to say this real quick. It says, love her as you love your own body. She's a part of you. Don't be selfish. Okay? Number four and number five go together, and I'm going to put them together because of time. I'll do it this way. It says this, cleanse her with your words, verse 26, and then it says this, cherish her, okay? Now here's the deal, guys. Men have the propensity to be critical, and they can start using their words the wrong way. Jesus cleanses us with his words. It means build her up with your words, okay? Remember who Jesus is? Jesus is the one who looks at Peter, and he looks at Simon, and he says, there's a Peter in you. He uses his words to speak to what he loves inside of us, and men, for whatever reason, we just have the propensity to get kind of critical, and it's like, well, I told her I loved her the day we got married, and if it changes, I'll let her know. And we stop saying the words. It's like, well, I mean, I've heard guys say this, not a joke. Well, I already won her, man. I wooed her. I conquered. Honeymoon's over. And I'm just like, what? Are you crazy? You need to woo her every day. Win her affections every day. Use your words to build her up every single day. And if you use your words in a negative way, if you stop speaking to your wife how beautiful she is, and how you want your wife to be beautiful, tell her she's beautiful. You stop speaking those things to her. You stop telling her how much she means you, how much you love her, and you just start focusing on the things that bother you about her. You know what's going to happen? She's going to be beat down inside. I know, because early in my marriage, I was a guy like that. I really was, and I saw the way it affected my wife, and I remember the day I had the revelation. It took me about 3 years to get it. Anyway, I've seen the negative side of it. I've also seen my wife blossom in the last 9 years or 10 years into this amazing woman of God, just because I learned to use my tongue a different way to speak to the things I love about her and call more forth. The same power she has to make you great, you have to make her great. And you have to learn to speak to those things that you love about her and call more forth. Tell her over and over and over again how you feel about her and how beautiful she is to you. All of those things. It deeply, deeply matters. It goes with cherishing, number five, which is verse 29. Our wives need to be cherished. Men, one of the main things I hear is, well, she feels disinterested. I feel like she's disinterested in my sexuality, blah, 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 blah. Okay? Number one thing I hear from women, I just don't feel valued by this guy. I don't feel desired. I don't feel cherished. I don't feel wanted by him. You got to hear me clearly, guys. You got to hear this really clear. Your wife is created by God to need to know that you deeply desire her. I mean, she's made that way. You see it with your little girl when she's 5 years old and she puts that pretty dress on, comes out and says, look at me, daddy. She's made that way. She's not, your wife is still that little girl. She needs to know that she's still wanted. I'm telling you the truth. I'm just going to ask you a simple question. Does your wife feel wanted by you? Does she feel desired by you? Man, I want my wife to know it. I do. I want her to feel that way. It makes a woman so beautiful. It makes your wife want to give herself to you the way you want her to. Woo her to it. Make a safe place. Be vulnerable. Some guys have been hurt and they don't want to be vulnerable. They don't want to let anyone know that they're needed by them. You got to get past that thing and give your wife the power to hurt you by telling her over and over and over again how much you love her, how much you adore her, how much you long for her, how beautiful she is to you. And you do those things, it makes a place for your wife to want to give herself to you. And then she gives herself to you with this reckless abandonment and it makes her even more beautiful to you. And you go, wow! And you're speaking more things to her. She wants to give more of herself to you. And it becomes this beautiful cycle of passion that you really can experience in your marriage simply by focusing on the things you love about her, speaking to those things, and making sure your wife feels deeply valued and deeply cherished. Because if she doesn't, she's vulnerable. Just like you're vulnerable if she's not meeting your sexual needs, so she's vulnerable if you're not meeting her emotional needs. I know so many women who've fallen into affairs and emotional attachments and all these other things because their emotional tank wasn't being built up. And I'm not making excuses for their sin. It's horrific. I'm not making excuses for their sin. I'm just telling you our wives are vulnerable and we have an obligation to them to make sure they feel cherished, valued, and wanted by us as their husband. And you know the truth is when you're doing that, it makes her want to meet your needs. It really does. I'm not saying just be sweet when you want sex. I'm not saying that. That's not going to cause her to feel cherished. That's going to cause her to feel used. I'm saying call her in the day. Just say, hey, just thinking about you. How you doing? I love you. That's it. I call my wife sometimes 2-3 times a day. I can't because I'm a pastor. I can take a break or I got a cell phone, whatever. You can't do that at the factory or whatever, but I can, so I do. Just do what you can do so she knows she's in your thoughts and your hearts and that you feel wild affection for her. Okay? Okay? Okay, man? Okay, thank you. All right, good. Okay, cherish her with your eyes. If you want your wife to feel devalued, look at pornography. That'll do it. Stop that. Just stop it, okay? Make her your only outlet of fantasy, of everything. Just focus on her. I'd like to say more about that. I'm out of time here. Let me say one more thing. Cleave to, not the last one. Cherish your wife by cleaving to her. It says he left his father and mother and cleaved to his wife. Here's what I want to say about that. Some men, and again, a woman came to me at the first service. So my husband, he's more into his mom than me. I mean, he'll do anything for her, but I can't get the guy to take me out to dinner. And so it definitely means that you really are called to leave, man, your father and your mother, and cleave to your wife. But it's more than just your father and your mother. It's everything. Hear me clearly. Your wife needs to know that she is number two in your life, a close second to Jesus alone, okay? Your job can't be more important. Your kids can't be more important. Your church life can't be more important. It's Jesus and my wife, and she needs to know it. And so many women feel like their husbands would rather be somewhere else than with them. So many women feel like their husbands would rather be out golfing with their buddies or hunting or whatever, and that if their husband could pick a Saturday afternoon, that their husband would pick to be somewhere else with someone else. And it's devastating to a woman. She needs to be your best friend, and she needs to know it. And it's hard in our culture. I understand it. Here's what you need to do. Fight for your wife. Don't even let your kids take second place. You know, the greatest thing you can do for your kids is love their mom as a close second to Christ. The greatest thing you can do for your kids is be wildly in love with their mom and let them know that she is number two. Your wife needs to know this. You got to fight for it. And there's more I could say about that. Just fight for that she would know that she is number two in your life, that she is your best friend, the one that you would pick to be with, okay? I got to stop. I got to pray.